Genesis chapter 13, which is where we're going to be, but as a lead-in, I'd like you to turn to 2 Peter chapter 2. 2 Peter chapter 2, we continue looking at Bible characters as we started in the book of Genesis, and tonight we come to a fellow whose name we probably all know well, and that's Abraham's nephew. His name is Lot. And as we look at these Bible characters, it's not just a matter of getting to know who they are, but is get to learning about them, because we are just like them. We're the same flesh and blood. We're the same old nature, new nature. There's no difference. And so when we look at these men and women, we can learn lessons from their lives. And tonight we're going to look at Lot. Notice, if you would, as we start in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse number 7. Well, we'll start in verse 6. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 6, you know the story. In turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, talking about what God did, making them an example unto those that after should live ungodly. And verse 7 says, and God delivered just Lot. Now, it doesn't mean just Lot like he's the only one. The Bible is calling Lot just. It's like just like Job was a just man. All right, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. In those verses, we need to understand that God puts two titles or two labels on Lot. The first one is just, and the second one is righteous. And the reason we need to know that is because he is the lousiest, just, righteous man you've ever seen in your life. Someone pointed out, called him this, it was a saved soul and a lost life. Because when we look at Lot beginning back in Genesis 13, we never would have thought of putting the title just or putting the term righteous together with Lot's name, and yet God does. And that is a comfort. It's really a comfort. When you look at Lot's life, there is nothing else in there that's going to be complimentary or good about it, other than the fact that God said he was a just man and a righteous man, but he vexed his soul daily with the conversation of the wicked, and he paid a terrible price in his lifetime for not following God. We're going to look at Lot as we begin tonight in Genesis chapter 13. Unlike Abraham that we studied last week, who grew up in a pagan household. You remember Abraham's father, Terah, was an idol maker. He made little statues and false gods and pagan idols that they worshipped. And Abraham grew up in that kind of household. Unlike that, Lot is growing up in Abraham's household. Lot has an advantage over Abraham. Lot's growing up under a righteous man. Genesis chapter 12, God calling Abraham to be the founder of a new nation. He's got Lot, his nephew, with him, his brother's son. And Lot, from his early days, is being exposed to a righteous man, a good man, a godly man, a God-fearing man. He's got all the advantages that he could have in life as a good example to follow. He was taught the way of righteousness. He was taught not to be selfish. We see Abraham's life, and Abraham was a giver. There are givers and there are takers. And Abraham was definitely a giver. We read many instances of Abraham's life being that way. He was a man that communed with God and walked with God. And God blessed Lot materially as long as he was around Abraham. Lot got in on all the blessings of Abraham as long as he stuck close to Abraham. And as he's growing up and learning Abraham was not his father, but it was almost a father-son relationship. It's a father and a nephew, but it's almost the same. And as long as Lot was around Abraham, everything was good, everything was prosperous, everything, even as he grew up, everything was the blessing of God. He grew up with the best of everything. But like the prodigal, there came a time when it was time for Lot to make his own decisions. And when he got to that point, he failed miserably. He felt all the advantages that he could have possibly had. But when it came to time to make his own decisions, he was not up to it. We're going to look at Lot tonight, number one, or letter A, we're going to look at Lot's choice. In verse 1 to 13 of Genesis chapter 13, you'll notice Lot's stories in Genesis 13, 14, and over in chapter 19, and our outline is pretty long tonight, continues on the back of this page that we gave you, so we'll try to get through it quickly as we can. But in Genesis chapter 13, we read about Lot's choice. The Bible says in Genesis 13, and Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. In verse 5, and Lot also went with Abraham and had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abraham said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we are brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, I will go to the left. We see Lot giving the opportunity of Abraham to make a choice. What happened that made him have to make a choice? What happened between Lot and Abraham? Well, God had so blessed them that they both had abundance monetarily and materialistically, that there had to come a time where they had to break apart. Number one, in Lot's choice, we see the dispute in verse 5 to 7. The dispute coming between Abraham and his nephew was a dispute that concerned, small letter A, their substance. Their substance. It says in verse 6, and the land was not able to bear them for that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. They couldn't dwell together, the Bible says, because their substance was great. While it appears that Abraham was comfortable with his wealth, and by that comfortable I mean simply that he existed with wealth. It didn't make him a better man. It didn't make him a lesser man. He was a worshiper of God and a follower of God, and whether he had the wealth or not really wouldn't have mattered to him and his relationship to God. Abraham was comfortable in his wealth, but Lot wasn't. Lot had an eye to more. Lot had an eye to independence from Uncle Abraham. He had an eye to getting different things, and their substance became an issue between the two of them, between Lot and his nephew. They both had plenty. They both had more than they could ever use. Abraham was satisfied, Lot was not. So then we see, second of all, small letter B, their strife. Their strife. It said in verse number 6, I've underlined the word substance, for their substance was great. Verse 7, and there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. Their substance caused a strife. Their possessions became a problem. Their possessions became a problem. We always envy those that have much. But you know, with much possessions comes much problems. Sometimes we don't see it. But you know, all you got to do is name names like Howard Hughes. And you realize that wealth does not take care of all of your problems. Wealth many times causes more problems than it fixes. And we ought to be thankful that we don't have the problems that Abraham and Lot had. A lot of times God does not give us wealth because he knows he can't entrust us with it. We couldn't handle it. And if we couldn't handle it, we ought not want it. Abraham could be trusted. Lot could not. They were both given an abundance, but they handled it differently. And it became a strife between the two of them. Money and material things can cause strife. And they often do in churches. Money can cause strife. The love of money. The Bible says the love of money is the root of all evil. And so we find the substance and the strife. And then small letter C, we find the servants. The strife began between the herdmen of Abraham and the herdmen of Lot, but then it spread to the two of them. As Abraham's herdsmen were out trying to lead the cattle to different lands, and Lot's had all this cattle and they're trying to lead to different lands, the herdsmen got in battles over land, over wells, over territory. And the strife between the two of them became a strife between Abram and Lot. Abram had to say to them in verse number 8, he said to Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren." The family unity was broken up by possessions. How many times have you heard folks talk about that? A mother or father dies and leaves an inheritance, and the kids are at each other's throats over who gets what and who doesn't get what and who claims this and who claims that. Possessions can be a handicap as much as a blessing. It all depends on the attitude. And here the abundance of wealth between Abraham and Lot caused a strife, not on Abraham's part, but on Lot's part. And so we find Lot's choice concerning the dispute in verse 5 to 7. Then number 2, we find the discussion in verse 8 and 9. The discussion, the dispute led to the discussion. Now it's Abraham that calls for the meeting. He begins to speak in verse 8, and Abraham said to Lot, "Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between thy herdmen and my herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me." Abraham calls for the meeting between him and Lot, and he says in verse number 8, in that discussion, he said, "Separate thyself, I pray thee." We're going to call this Abraham's prayer. Abraham or Abram's prayer, small letter A under number 2, the discussion. Abram's prayer. He said in verse number 8, "Let there be no strife, for we be brethren." His desire was for peace. Abraham's desire was for peace. He's the spiritual man. He's trying to seek a solution. Lot never tries to seek a solution. Lot just goes with the flow and says, "All right, our herdmen are too great," and he gets greedy, and he wants the best for himself and for his cattle, and he looks off to the lands of Sodom. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But Abraham seeks to make peace between the two of them. The spiritual man always seeks peace. Now, peace isn't always possible, and peace sometimes can come at great expense. That doesn't mean monetarily or materialistically. It can become in the expense of a relationship sometimes to seek peace. But Abraham is the one that has the prayer to seek peace. Then small letter B, we see Abram's plan. Abram's plan in verse number 9. "Is not the whole land before thee?" Notice this next word, "separate thyself." Separate. Some people you can only get along with from afar. And that was the situation between Abraham and Lot. This is not the prodigal coming and saying, "Give me my goods and let me take off." Abraham's going to him and said, "You know, Lot, if we're going to work this thing out, the only way we're going to work it out is if we divide, if we get away from each other. That's the only way we're going to solve it." Now, we're not talking about marriage relationships here, okay? We're talking in this family unit, in this thing. If Abraham's going to continue doing what he needs to do and serve God and please God, it's going to take some separation from Lot, because Lot's heart is in a different direction. We're going to see these two guys go to polar opposite directions in their life, in their spirituality, and everything. And for Abraham to seek peace with Lot, it's going to cause separation. Abraham's going to allow Lot to choose first. We know Abraham's character, his nature. He's a humble man. He's a self-sacrificing man. But he's going to have to separate. You know, the world today talks a lot about unity. That's all you ever hear about is unity, unity. Even the Christian community or churches talk about unity, unity. Sometimes it's best to separate. Sometimes it's best not to be together. When it comes to churches, when those compromised on doctrine or are worldly or modernistic in their doctrines, it's better not to have unity. It's better to separate. We can have peace with all the churches around us just because we don't have to have unity with them. We don't have to get along. And there's nothing wrong with that. Abraham and Lot, Abraham saw the solution to their problem, the solution. And Lot should have been the one to say, "Oh, Uncle Abraham, I don't want to have to leave you. I don't want to have to go away from you." That should have been Lot's attitude, but we're going to see that wasn't Lot's heart at all. He couldn't wait for the opportunity to get away from Uncle Abraham. Get away from his religion, get away from his God, get away from his morality, get away from all of that. He couldn't wait. And Abraham finally came to the point where he said, you know, we've got to separate. If we're going to get along any longer, Lot, we're going to have to break this thing up. You're going to have to go somewhere else. And so we find that discussion in verse number 8 or 9 where Abraham calls for a meeting and offers the solution to their problem is to separate, to get away one from another. And I think sometimes we need to learn that lesson. The best thing for us is to get away from some of those things that negatively affect us and that hinder us in our relationship and our walk with God. So we find Lot's choice. Letter A, the dispute, or number one, the dispute. Number two, the discussion. Number three, the decision in verse 10 and 11. The decision. Lot has a decision to make. And again, it had been a better decision if he said, Uncle Abraham, I'll just sell everything I've got. I don't want to sacrifice our relationship. I don't want my possessions to be a problem between you and me. You've been good to me all these years. Your God has blessed me. I'll get rid of these things. I can get them over again. But how can I restore my relationship with you if we separate and depart? That would have been better for Lot, but that's not the way Lot's mind worked. And the reason it was because small letter A. Lot was weak in his devotion. Lot was weak in his devotion. Look, if you would, in Genesis 13 and verse 4. The Bible says when Abraham, in verse 3, went on his journey from south to Bethel, it says in verse 4, under the place of the altar which he had made there at the first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. You know what you find when Abram travels from land to land in the book of Genesis? Everywhere he goes, he builds an altar, and he worships God. You know what you never read about in the life of Lot when he travels from one place to another? He never builds an altar and never worships God. He was weak in his devotion to God. A person that is weak in their devotion to God is not going to make a right decision. It's impossible. It's like two magnets trying to put them together. It doesn't work. When a person is weak in their devotion to God, they cannot make right decisions. That's why so many wrong decisions are made by good people. Again, we're not saying Lot is a heathen. He's not a drunkard. He's not a white. He's not any of those things. But he's making a wrong decision because he's weak in his devotion to God. Not only that, but he's worldly in his desires. Small letter B. Lot was worldly in his desires. Lot had a hunger, and it wasn't for spiritual things. It was for secular things. Lot had a desire, and it wasn't for the things of God. It was for the things of the world. Remember, look back at Genesis chapter 12 and verse number 10. Remember what happened in the life of Abraham? After God had called Abram in Genesis chapter 12 to get from his father's, his country and from his kindred and from his father's house, it says in verse 10, there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Shortly after Abraham's calling from God, because of a famine in the land, Abraham made a mistake. Abraham made an error in judgment, and he ran down to Egypt during the famine. He should not have gone there. Two times in Abraham's life, because of a famine in the Holy Land, he runs down to Egypt. And both the times he pays for it, it was a bad decision to make. But the thing about Abraham was, and Brother Sturt said it Sunday night, a just man falleth seven times and getteth up again. Abraham lost some spiritual battles along the way, but he also had a lot of victories. Lot never had any victories. All he ever had were losing battles. And when Abram went down to Egypt and took Lot down there with him, when he brought Lot back out of Egypt, there was a problem. Egypt never came out of Lot. In fact, you're going to read in your Bible, what is it, in verse number 10, that when Abraham tells Lot to pick which way he's going to go, he looks and finds these well-watered plains. And verse 10 says, like the land of Egypt. Lot never got Egypt out of his heart and out of his mind. All the worldliness he saw down there, all the partying, all the good life, all the pageantry, everything he saw in Egypt down there, when he came out of it, his heart was still at those things. Lot was worldly in his desires. And then, small letter C, Lot was wrong in his decisions. Lot was wrong in his decisions. I don't know what Abraham, I don't know what Lot thought he was going to do when he went to Sodom. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know, I'm going to go down there to that wicked city and I'm going to preach. I'm going to have a Bible study in my home every Monday night. I don't know what was in Lot's heart. I have a hard time thinking he even thought that direction because we don't see that nature in Lot. But he went down to Sodom and he left his uncle Abraham and he left the place of blessing and he left the place of worship to go out on his own. And when he did, he completely fell apart. You know, I heard a statistic. Sonia and I were driving up to see Dave and Roberta yesterday, and we're driving up, we're listening to the Christian radio. And some preacher was on there preaching, and I don't know if it's, I haven't checked this today, but he said, I think he said 81% of Christian children, those like our children, raised in Christian homes, 81% forsake God when they go off to college. And I thought, but that's a disappointing statistic. And a sad statistic. I don't know if it's true or not. I guess he's researched it and known that. But that's what Lot did. Lot was raised in Abraham's house. He was raised with every benefit. And yet when it was time for him to go off and make his own decisions, he made wrong ones because he was weak in his devotion and worldly in his desire. And when that happens, you're going to be wrong in your decisions. You and I work with our kids and try to get them to make right decisions. The decisions aren't going to be made right unless the other things are right first. You can't make the right decision unless you first are right in your devotions and right in your desires. Then you can make the right decision. Sometimes we try to fix number three without addressing one and two. It's a spiritual problem. And Lot had that problem. He made his decision in verse 10 and 11. Verse 10, Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like unto the land of Egypt as thou comest into Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan. Why? Because verse 10 said the plain of Jordan was well watered. Abraham said, you look any direction you want to, Lot, and you pick. I'll let you pick first. That's the kind of man Abraham was. Lot should have deferred. Lot should have said, no, Uncle Abraham, as long as I'm with you, God's blessed. You go first. You pick. You're the elder. But Lot was selfish. Lot was greedy. He took he looked for the best land and said, that's the one I'll take. He went by its appearance. He went by how it looked. He went by whether it would fulfill the desires of his and the lust of his heart. And it was like the land of Egypt. That was his decision. Then look at number four, if you would, the direction. As we think about Lot's choice, the dispute in verse 5 to 7, the discussion in verse 8 and 9, the decision in verse 10 and 11, and the direction in verse 12 and 13. The direction. Abraham, it says in verse 12, or Abram, dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities. Have you seen that word as we've been starting into Genesis? And again, this is not a sermon against cities. But you remember as we've seen the cities expand and grow and the crime and the murder rate and all that in the book, early book of Genesis. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. He's not in Sodom yet. He'll move down there later. But he's going to pitch the door of his tent is not going to be facing the land of Goshen, not the land where Abraham was. That the tent door is going to be facing Sodom. He's already looking that direction, leaning that direction. This is his direction. Abram, small letter A, Abram dwelt in the land of promise. Abram dwelt in the land of promise. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan. You know what the land of Canaan is? The land that flows with milk and honey. It's the land we know today as Israel, the land that God has given to Abram and to his seed. It's the blessed land. It's a spiritual land. It's the land that God gave to Abraham. It's the land of promise. Abraham was looking to what God had given and what God had provided, but Lot was looking with human eyes at what looked best at the time. Abram chose the land of Canaan, but Lot pitched his tent toward Sodom. Lot dwelt in the land of perverseness. The land of perverseness. You know what Sodom and Gomorrah is. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But just see the contrast between these two men, between Abraham and Lot. Abraham, the spiritual man, the giver, the caring, the compassionate, realizes there needs to be a reconciliation between the two of them because they're at strife, and the only way they're going to fix this thing is for them to separate. Abraham realizes he and Lot can't dwell together anymore. Lot's a grown man now. He's not a young boy. He's chosen his direction and picked his way. And Abraham says, all right, you need to go your way, Lot. And Lot chooses his way, and he looks at the world, and he looks at Sodom, and he says, oh, it's just like when we were down in Egypt a little while ago. It's got everything that I want and everything that I offer. I don't want that altar of Abraham. I don't want that God and those commandments and those regulations. I want the world and what it's got to offer. And Lot pitches his tent toward Sodom. He dwells in the land of perverseness. Verse 13 says this, but the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. That's what Lot wanted. That's what Lot chose. That was his decision. That was the direction he wanted to go. So many similarities between this and that story of the prodigal. Lot made that decision to go to pitch his tent toward Sodom, knowing that the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. It's interesting. I know we've pointed this out, that Genesis 13:13 has 13 words in it. That's a bad number. The number 13 in Scripture is a bad number. It's a number of rebellion. You take Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom, Gomorrah, those two cities. Sodom has 5 letters. Gomorrah has 8. That's 13. There's a lot of other things. Judas Iscariot, the great rebel, has 13 letters. A lot of Mystery Babylon, that quote in Revelation. A lot of things. 13's just jumps out in the Bible as an unlucky number, if you want to say that. And people today think the same thing. Well, you know where they got that? They got that from that book right there, and they don't even realize it. They build a high-rise building that's 15 floors high. They go 11, 12, 14, 15. They skip the 13th floor. You say, where'd they ever get that idea? Well, it's not an unlucky number. I mean, you don't have to be fearful of that number, whatever phobia that is of the number 13. But in the Bible, it's the number of rebellion. We say when a teenager hits 13, it's the teenage years. And what's that? Oh, boy. Bar the doors. Get ready. Here it comes. It's that number. The number 13 is the number of rebellion. And here he chooses, that's the plate that Lot, that all the Bible does is to show us that and teach us that so we can see the heart of Lot. It was a rebellious heart. He wanted to get out from under Abraham's roof. He wanted to get away from Abraham's worship. He wanted to get away from Abraham's God. And the thing I like about Abraham, he said, Lot, separate, go. Just like when we preached about the prodigal son a couple of weeks ago. When the younger son came to the father and said, Father, give me all that's mine. The father didn't argue with him. The father didn't say no. The father didn't try to hang on. The father gave him his stuff and said, all right, go. And let him go. He wasn't going to let the son ruin the father's house. Abraham's not going to allow Lot to suck off of him for all this time. He's going to say, all right, Lot, time for you to go. You're a young man. You've made your decision. You've chosen your direction. You go. And he lets him leave. So we find Lot's choice. Then we see letter B, Lot's chains. Lot's chains. And we go over to Genesis chapter 14. Genesis chapter 14. And we find now Lot living in Sodom. First he pitched his tent towards Sodom, then he moved down into the city, and he dwelt there. And when he moved his family down to Sodom, number one, he exposed his family to wickedness. Number one, he exposed his family to wickedness. You know what the life was up in Abraham's tent? It was dull. It was dull life. It was a dull life for a young man like Lot. I mean, there they were out in the country taking care of cattle, worshiping at an altar, going to bed when the sun went down, getting up when the sun came up, working most of the day and then having good meals and eating and being blessed with an abundance of things. But what could he do with it? He couldn't enjoy it. It was just dull and boring out there in that land out there. But now he's down in Sodom. Now there's a life. Now there's things. He's in the cities. There's things to do. There's people to be with. And Lot was willing to sacrifice his family because of those desires. And it caused chains for them. He exposed his family to wickedness. His children's friend now were the children of Sodom instead of the saints of God. His wife now went shopping down in Sodom with all its allurements and all its attractions and all its sinfulness. See, it wasn't much fun for Lot's wife out there with Sarah in the tent. I mean, all they could do was cook and clean, take care of kids and raise them and train them, teach them, watch them grow. But it's a lot more exciting down there in Sodom. There were a lot more things going on. The lights were more alluring. It was more flashing. And Lot took his family and moved down in there, not realizing the effect that Sodom was going to have on his children. And he moved his family down there. He moved out of the will of God. He moved from a place of God's blessing to a place that God had forsaken, to a place where God wasn't welcome, to a place where God wasn't worshipped, to a place that God wasn't thought of or acknowledged. And no matter what his intentions might have been, there might have been good intentions, as we mentioned already, no matter what they were, when he went from that place to that place, he was going downhill, and it's going to lead to his chains. Lot's chains were a direct result of Lot's choice. A lot of times Christian people want to make a decision, and the decision comes with consequences, and they don't want the consequences. Or when they come to God for forgiveness and say, God, I made a wrong decision here, they expect God to erase the consequences. God never does that. God will save somebody that was strung out on drugs. But when he saves them and forgives their sins, and thank God he does not give them a complete mind back. Whatever damage has been done, and God doesn't just restore it. There are consequences that come with sin. A lot of times, even as parents, we want to cover up the consequence. We want to make it all right. Abraham told Lot, he said, you need to go. You've made your decision. Lot went down and took his family down and exposed them to the wickedness down there in Sodom. Then secondly, he exposed his family to warfare. He exposed his family to warfare. Long before God rained fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah, the kings of the east, notice in verse chapter 14 and verse 1, it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, Tidal, king of the nations, that these made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admon, Shemeber, king of Zeboam, and the king of Bela, which is Zoar. All these were joined together in the vale of Siddim, which is the Salt Sea. 12 years they served Chedorlaomer. Notice the verse where the rest of it. And in the 13th year they, what? Rebelled. That's the number 13. And in the 13th year they rebelled. And in the 14th year came Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him and smote the Rephaims and Ashtaroth, Carnaim, and the Zuzims in Ham, and the Emims and Shaba and Kirathaim, and the Horites in their Mount Serum unto El Paran, which is by the wilderness. And they returned and came to En Mishpat, which is Kadesh, and smote all the country of the Amalekites and also the Amorites, and dwelt in Hazion Tamar. And there went out the king of Sodom, and the king of Gomorrah, and the king of Admah, and the king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, the same as Zoar. And they joined battle with them in the vale of Siddim, with Chedorlaomer, the king of Elam, and with Tidal, the king of the nations, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elasar, four kings with five. And the vale of Siddim was full of slime pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled and fell there. And they that remained fled to the mountains. And they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah and all their victuals and went their way. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. God's judgment fell on Sodom and Gomorrah in this instance, long before the fire and brimstone. And there was a war there, and some kings came from the east and conquered Sodom and Gomorrah and took all the goods, confiscated, took all the good things of that place, the material things. And Lot's son was taken. Not only was Lot taken, but verse number 16 says, and the women also and the people, Lot's wife and Lot's children, all suffered from Lot's bad decision to go down into Sodom. And a lot of times the children suffer because of bad decisions by the fathers, bad decisions by the parents, and the children suffer for it. That's why it's important for all of us to make the right decisions and to teach our children, make the right decision, because your decision affects your children and the consequences are going to be there. Lot never dreamed. Can you imagine when he was being hauled out after the battle's over and he's got that yoke around his neck and he's chained and his wife and his kids are all there and they're all being marched out as slaves back to the other land? I wonder if he can look off the distance and see the smoke rising up from the fire of Abraham's abode out there in the country. And I wonder at that point if he didn't say, why did I leave? Why did I ever go? It was so peaceful back there. It was so nice and settling back there. Abraham is sitting down now to his dinner and getting ready to rest for the night, and we're being hauled off in servitude to another land. Lot made those decisions and exposed his family to that warfare. And all this happened because of his choice. He looked to Sodom and Gomorrah. Number three then, or letter C at the bottom of the page, Lot's chance. Lot's chance. Abraham was a good uncle. He was a good uncle when he put Lot out. Now he's going to be a good uncle when he hears what has happened to his nephew Lot and the battle that's been fought down in chapter 14 and verse 13. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, the brother of Eshcol, the brother of Aner. These were confederate with Abram. When Abram heard that his brother, talking about his nephew Lot, his brother's son, was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, and pursued them unto Dan. And he divided himself against them, he and his servants, by night, and smote them and pursued them unto Hobah, which is on the left hand of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought again his brother Lot and his goods and the women also and the people. Yes, Lot had made a bad decision. God's judgment fell. He was taken captive, a prisoner, into another land. But good old righteous Abraham trains those men of his own house. 318 men he trains to handle the bow, and he goes off to rescue his nephew Lot. And Lot gets a second chance. Abraham goes out there and rescues him and brings him over. Number one, his chastisement was over. His chastisement was over. God has made an attempt to correct, to chastise, to correct. All chastisement is for correction. Hebrews chapter 6 tells us that God chastises us when we need correction. And we ought to be thankful for chastisement. Remember when you get spanked as a kid, you didn't usually turn around and say, thank you, Dad. But we should have, because that was our parents' correction, teaching us to do right. And we've lost that in our day and our society many places. There's no more correction being done. And Lot gets corrected. God allows him to be taken and his family taken into captivity. And then Abraham comes and rescues all of them. The chastisement is over. Now, let's get on the right track. Abraham, Uncle Abraham, can I come back out there to Haran and live with you? Can I come back out there to the easy life, the comfortable life, the peaceful life? I mean, it was hard work and we worshiped God and I know all that, but I'm tired of the life down here in Sodom. I see how it is now. Can I come back? Number two, Lot's chance. His chance was offered. His chance was offered. He could return to the safety of Abraham, or he could return to Sodom. And you know what Lot did? After being pulled out of the slime pits, after being rescued by Uncle Abraham, now he's got the chance to go to safety with Abraham or go back to Sodom. You know what he chose? He chose Sodom. How hard-headed can you be? What kind of numbskull was Lot? He just got rescued from that, and he's going back to the same place again. How dumb can we be? How big a numbskull can we be when we repeat the same mistakes twice? When God delivers us from a bad decision and we turn around and repeat the same thing a second time. See, Lot's nature is just the same nature you and I have. I appreciate God's goodness. I appreciate his chastisement. And Lot makes a decision. Galatians chapter 4, verse 9 says, "But now after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements wherein ye desire to be in bondage?" Lot has an opportunity now to escape Sodom, but he chooses to go back down there. And all the price he's going to pay. It was enough to pay the first time. But now he makes a conscious decision to return to that place of ungodliness and wickedness. The Lord had sent one judgment upon them with the kings coming invading. And Lot has escaped by the skin of his teeth. But now God's going to send another judgment. And Lot's second decision to go back is going to cost him more than the first one did. He's not going to learn his lesson. We go to this back page of the outline then, and we find then letter D, Lot's children. Lot's children. You know what you read in the Bible many times? You read about the transgressor, that his children to the seventh generation till not enter into the house of the Lord. And you and I think that's pretty harsh. In our 21st century mind, we think that's pretty harsh. But you know what God was teaching them? There is a price for the decisions that you make. The decision that's made by one generation is going to affect the next generation. You can find that in world history. When heads of nations turned their back on God and the generations after them suffered for it. It wasn't because God gave up on them. It's because somebody made a wrong decision. And it got passed down from one generation. That's the importance. It stresses to you and I the importance of you and I making the right decisions. Lot didn't make it. Lot didn't involve himself with the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah. In fact, Lot was such a good man that they made him one of the heads of the city council, so to speak. He started by pitching his tent toward Sodom. Then he moved down and dwelt in Sodom. Then they made him, the Bible says he sat in the gate. That means they gave him a position of leadership in the city. Maybe because of Uncle Abraham. I mean, after they'd just been defeated and everything's been taken away, and then Lot's uncle that they didn't know anything about, who is this guy? Oh, that's the uncle of Lot. Well, let's make him a councilman. If he's got an uncle that's powerful, we need to give him a position in our community. And they made him one of the leaders, and now he's a leader in Sodom and Gomorrah. He's not one of them. He doesn't practice their vileness. He's a just man and a righteous man, but you'd never know it. He's vexing his righteous soul day after day, according to 2 Peter. But he's going to pay the price. Notice Lot's children. Number one, they absorbed Sodom's values. They absorbed Sodom's values. We know what the city of Sodom was like because the Bible tells us. It was a wicked, vile, immoral, ungodly place. Its number one feature was sexual immorality. And it's going to come back and haunt Lot through his own children. It's a wicked and ungodly place. And when he took his children there, Lot wasn't one of those kind of people. He wasn't that kind of. But the kids went every day to school. And the kids played and socialized with the other kids. And Lot's wife went out to the marketplace every day. She had to. She had to go and shop. She had to go and get the food for the family and get all those things. And all day long, they were out there being influenced by that city that Lot had moved them to. Lot's back home. He's a good man. He's a righteous man. He's not involved in those things. But his influence didn't rub off on his children. He just thought, well, look at me and do as I do. And live like I live. But they had more influence from the world than they had from him. And he lost them. He lost his own children. They absorbed Sodom's values. Sodom was a place of the alternative lifestyle. Now, even that phrase sounds wrong. The alternative lifestyle should mean you're eating food different from everybody else or something like that. It should not mean immorality. They call it gay. As they stole the word and made a happy word into a vile word. They call it homosexuality. I think that has 13 letters, if I'm not mistaken. But they paraded it in that city. They weren't ashamed of it. They boasted of it. They bragged about it. And when a nation gets to the point where it boasts and brags about that kind of lifestyle, they're in trouble. God's judgment's about to come. Not just that it goes on, but when they publicize it and brag about it, which our nation is quickly heading in that direction. We've got a president that's made that part of his agenda for the next 4 years. And when we become such an affront to God as this nation did, that it was public. It wasn't in the closet. It was out on the main streets. Everybody, even visitors weren't safe in the city of Sodom. Even travelers that would stop for the night were not safe staying out in the street. In fact, two visitors showed up here in Genesis 19, and when Lot brought them into the house, they weren't even safe in the house. It was a wicked place. And Abraham had brought his family there, and they had absorbed the immorality and the values of Sodom. He had at least two daughters that had married men of Sodom. Because we read that when God pronounces judgment, Lot runs to his daughter, the houses of his daughters-in-law, or his daughters, the houses of his daughters, and speaks to his sons-in-law, plural, which means he had at least two daughters he raised in Sodom that married men from Sodom. Why wouldn't they? Why would they marry somebody outside if this is where he took them to raise them? And so Lot has brought his two daughters in there, and they've married at least two of them, probably three, I think, because when Abraham gets down to 10 people, I think there were 10 in Lot's family, which would mean three married daughters and three sons-in-laws, along with Lot and his wife and two unmarried daughters. But that's what's happened with Lot's family. They've married off around there. That happens over and over again in the Bible. I think of a guy named Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat in the Bible was a good, godly king. But he lined up with Ahab, that rotten guy, that husband of Jezebel. Jehoshaphat aligned with him in battles many times, and Jehoshaphat's son ended up marrying a daughter of Jezebel and Ahab, and Jehoshaphat's son turned out to be an enemy of God because Jehoshaphat aligned with the enemies of God. He was fine. He was good. He died in peace. He died in favor with God, but his children didn't. Lot's the same way. He's moved down to Sodom and Gomorrah. His children are defiled. They've absorbed Sodom's values. Number two, they acted out Sodom's vices. They acted out Sodom's vices. Small letter A, his daughter's behavior. His daughter's behavior. The angels had come down to Sodom, you know the story. Said, Lot, you've got to get out of this place. And the angels took Lot and Lot's wife and his two unmarried daughters and literally dragged them out of Sodom that night before the fire and brimstone could fall from heaven. And you know the story. The Gospel of Luke tells us that Lot's wife got so far out of town and turned and looked longingly back toward Sodom. We don't know what was in her heart. We don't know what she's looking for, whether it was the furniture, whether it was her daughters-in-law, but she looked longingly back there, and the Bible says she turned to a pillar of salt. God didn't even want them looking back at that place. That's how much God hated and despised it. And so now Lot's with his two daughters, and they're up in the mountains, and they're hiding from the wrath of God. Number one, Lot was drunk. If you know the story, we don't have time to read it in Genesis chapter 19. The two daughters of Lot that had been so influenced by the immorality of Sodom came up with a plan that you and I just can't even begin to fathom. One daughter said, I'm going to make my father drink wine, not whiskey, not anything hard, wine. You know, a lot of Christians say, oh, there's nothing wrong with wine. Well, run the references in the Bible. Here in this context, in Genesis 19, four times the word wine appears, just like it did with Noah back in chapter 10 when he drank it and something terrible happened to him. Now for the second time, wine is mentioned four times in this context and something terrible happens. The Bible's got some wonderful lessons in it if Christians would just open their eyes and accept it. And so here they make their father drink wine and the daughter lays down with her father that night and commits incest. What an ungodly, vile, terrible, filthy thing could happen. How in the world, where did this idea come from? Down in Sodom. Every kind of immorality was practiced down there. Every kind of ungodly, unrighteous thing was done down there. And to the daughter, it was no big deal. We can't even begin to fathom how that could be no big deal. But they'd absorbed Sodom's values. Now they're acting out Sodom's vices. And the second daughter comes in. Number two, Lot was dishonored. Lot was dishonored. The second daughter comes in after the first father the next night, and they make father drink wine again. They get him drunk. Lot, a righteous man. Again, I said at the beginning, he's a saved soul, but a lost life. He made a mess. Everything in his life was a mess. And it's only the grace of God that could say he was a just man and a righteous man. Because everything he touched around him, he defiled. And he made a mess out of. And Lot was dishonored because the second daughter came and lay with him that night. And then the Bible says that both of Lot's daughters were with child from their father. Small letter B. A was his daughter's behavior. Letter B, his descendants' battles. His descendants' battles. Lot's two daughters are not named, but their offspring are. The first one had a boy, and she named him Moab. The second daughter had a son also. She named him Ammon. And so we got number one, the Moabites. The Moabites. Read them throughout the Old Testament. Look up that word Moabites and follow them. You know who they are? They are the arch enemies of Israel. Every time you turn around, the Moabites are opposing Abraham's seed. And where'd they come from? They came from Lot, Abraham's own nephew, in his immorality, because his daughters had picked up the vices and the immorality of Sodom and Gomorrah. And the second one is the Ammonites. The Moabites and the Ammonites, named after Moab and Ammon, the two illegitimate children of Lot through his own daughters. And all throughout 1 and 2 Samuel and 1 and 2 Kings and 1 and 2 Chronicles, there's battle after battle after battle among David and his men against the Moabites and the Ammonites. And their very existence comes from a cave outside of Sodom and Gomorrah with Lot and his two daughters because they picked up the values, the vices, and they acted out the things that they picked up in Sodom and Gomorrah. And yet we conclude with 2 Peter chapter 2. Lot, a just man and a righteous man. I'm thankful that God's got his mercy and he's got it under control. And I'm thankful that even when we make a mess out of our life, it doesn't affect our soul and its standing before God. But at the same time, we don't want to use that as an excuse to say, well, if God could call Lot righteous, if he could call him just, I've got no problem. Yeah, but do you want to make the mistakes that Lot made? You want to pay those prices? Do we want our children to pay those prices through their grandchildren? Lot's example is a tremendous, though sad, example of what happens when they leave Abraham and they leave his God and they leave his worship and they leave his work and they leave his way and they pitch their tents toward Sodom. That's what Lot did. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.